Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 823rd episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. And on today's podcast, we have the replay of our monthly Rosie on the House radio hour. Today, we're featuring Janice Norton, manager of the Urban Farm, and me, Farmer Greg, talking about ways to get your garden watered. Enjoy.
Rosie, Rosie on the House, every Arizona homeowner's best friend.
Come on around back Arizona, Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, the Outdoor Living Hour of Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning tradition since 1988. Here, the fourth Saturday of the month, Farmer Greg joins us in the Urban Farming Hour, and he's got special guest Janice Norton joining us as well as we talk through getting your garden watered. A pretty critical element here in the great state of Arizona for all the gardeners and a lot of people. We have snowbirds that just give up.
Yeah, they do.
And go. And they're gone. And they don't even care. Lawn's dead, or they might have a maintenance guy that comes by and does some landscape stuff, but the garden's dead, backyard grass is dead, everything's gone, they're gone. But there's more of us still here than there are gone. And there's things that we can still do, even in the heat. Mind over matter. If you don't mind, it don't matter. So let's get our garden water.
Well, that was good. I've not heard that one. So we're going to start with a permaculture concept of observation. Permaculture, I like to call the art and science of working with nature. How do we work in the flow of nature? And the number one thing to do in permaculture is observe, pay attention, figure out, know what's going on in your space. So I want you to start by getting a sense of different ways you can get your place watered, because there's more than one. Most people just think, oh, it's just city water or it's just well water. And while those are two good places to look, there's a bunch of other places to look for where to get your water at. When I lived at the urban farm, I had something called flood irrigation. It's a water right that comes with the property. In fact, 34 years ago when I bought the property, I was looking for a flood irrigated property because I knew I wanted to garden and grow a lot of fruit trees. So I bought near 16th Street and Glendale, and that's an old citrus orchard from the 1920s. So that water right came with the property. There's also rainwater and gray water. And I get this question a lot from people. They say, why should I even bother catching, saving, directing rainwater? And my response is always, well, it's there and we get so little of it. How can we make best use of it? And my big thing with rainwater harvesting is not putting it in tanks. Putting it in tanks is expensive, but directing it to the place in your yard where you want it and then planting around that place. So you're going to push the water in to basins and then plant around them. Yes, Janice?
You said that we don't get a lot of rainwater. I guess the change that I would say there is the rainwater that we do get is infrequent. But when we get water, we get a lot more than people realize.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the case. So be thinking about rainwater. The other thing is,
and on here you have rainwater and stormwater. What's the different classifications between those?
Very good. Stormwater is the water that runs on the street in front of your house. And Brad Lancaster, in his projects about 8 or 10 years ago, at night cut a curb so that the water would come in off the street into a basin. And he set it up in a very specific way. The water that runs by on the street fills up the basin, and there's only one inlet. So once that basin is full, the water keeps running down the street. And now, interestingly enough, I know for sure that it's legal to do curb cuts in Tucson. I believe they're legal statewide.
So, and Brad's in Tucson.
So that's the difference between rainwater and stormwater.
And what do you call those again? I'm going to look that up and put that in the archive page, how to check and see if curb cuts are legal.
Curb cuts. Curb cuts. Yeah.
Okay.
Curb cuts. And then there's gray water. Gray water is any water that goes down any sink or drain in your house, except your kitchen sink and your toilets. And 50 to 80% of the water that you use in your house is gray water. And guess what? It's legal to use gray water in the state of Arizona.
There was a time there were certain cities that still did not accept that as reusable water, but it has completely gone statewide. Gray water.
Yeah. And again, thanks to Brad Lancaster. Brad's the water harvesting guru down in Tucson. He's written Rainwater Harvesting for Drylands and Beyond. It's an epic book. It's been out about 20 years.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in rainwater harvesting, that is the book to get. And then there's one other place to look, and that's condensation coming off of your air conditioning unit. And interestingly enough, a lot of that water, starting in July when the monsoons come, you can get 5 gallons a day. And there's a lot you can do with that water. Pay attention to that, that it's not just dripping away. And then I invite you to look to see what else there is on your property that is providing you water. There you go. That's something to ponder. Figure out where your water's coming from.
That's the resources of water that can come on your property and you can take advantage of.
Now, take it to the next step there, the types of irrigation. So we've got water provided either from the city or the private well. From that point, mechanically, we can put it in a lot of places. And all these other areas are great, but the primary source of water is still going to be back from city-provided, well-provided water sources.
Yeah, 95% probably of the valley is using some sort of water that is already in a system, whether that be city or in their wells. And when you're getting it through your house and into your yard, which is what we talk about, we have different ways of getting it directed or controlled into your gardens and your tree wells and stuff. There's flood irrigation that Greg talked about, which is when the water is controlled once a month or so, and you have this ditch that it comes through and you open up the ditch and then it floods your ground. This is a massive amount of water, 1-2 times a month.
And in older properties, established neighborhoods, it's not something a new development can get the water rights to install. So these are old properties that were on SRP District, Salt River Project, and they're the ones that provide the water. So you see them, Central Phoenix, and there's a couple in North Phoenix, but a lot more as you move into the Southeast Valley off of their primary water sources where the Verde and the Salt River confluences.
Yeah, it was thought to be very inexpensive, but now that they've been maintaining these programs for a while, it's proving to be a little bit more expensive than you would think.
Oh, you mean maintaining the pipes?
Yeah.
And there's actually flood irrigation properties all the way from West Phoenix all the way out to Queen Creek, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, Waddell has a few, Buckeye has a few, but you see them a lot as you get closer to SRP's main water sources.
Yeah.
That is not something that everybody has. Most of the new people coming into the valley are going to be getting houses that have some sort of irrigation system. And a very common type of irrigation is called, in the trade, spaghetti, which is basically this thin black line that is a little less than the finger width of a pinky finger width of a young lady. And it has a hole at the end. And you put some sort of tip at the end that controls how much is coming out at one point. Now, that is attached to poly tubing, which is black tubing that is somewhat flexible. It snakes through the yard. This is a very common in the front yards and backyards of any place that starts out with typical bushes and plants and flowers and stuff. This is not what we recommend for gardens. This is not going to be useful.
And it's commonly referred to also as your Zeroscape or low water use system.
The drip system.
Now,
it's spaghetti drip.
You've got a larger
poly
three-quarter inch poly tube that has to have a pressure regulator to keep the PSI small enough so it's not bursting everything down line because everything is pressure fitted. Once you get your
system
spaghetti line plugged into your poly line and the other end that it comes out, there's a lot of different applications of emitters. There's ones that go by gallon. There's ones that are adjustable. There's ones that you can put on that you can then put on three or four more additional spaghetti lines to it.
Yeah, there's a lot to it.
And each one of those, a squirrel will eventually find some kind of ground animal, dog, cat, and chew up.
And the interesting thing is that you can find these systems at different stores, like the big box stores, and they're not all the same. So you can get started with one, and then you might have to go to different stores to find what you need. But that's the spaghetti drip. Another version is getting some solid lines like PVC piling up with a bubbler, which is a little piece that comes in the end, and it brings the water up like a little spray fountain on the end, which gives a lot more water to one location. That is a favorite for trees. And then the one that we love is the drip tape, which is a flat tubing that has holes in it every 6 to 8 inches. Now, this is what we love for gardens.
And we'll talk about why those are so effective for gardens right after this. There's a lot we can do here at Rosie on the House, but we can't stop the clock. We have Janice Norton and Farmer Greg from the Urban Farm joining us here in the Urban Farm Hour. We do it the fourth Saturday of every month in this 8 o'clock on Outdoor Living Hour. Topic today, getting your garden water. All right, as we were going to the break, Janice was going to go into why drip tape is such a favorite for our vegetable gardens. But before we get to that, because we've got a lot more on installing drip irrigation, soil types, and understanding how watering affects different soil types and vice versa. Because that's pretty critical, too.
It really is. And if you understand what type of soil type you have, then you can best manage your water for the most efficient watering of the soil and for your plants, because different plants need different kinds, different amount, and the soil impacts that much more than we think. So what are the different types of soil? There's sandy soil, there's loamy soil, and there's clay soil. Those are the three kinds. And your soil is going to have some element of all three, or at least two. Now, I say two because I had some in my yard that was mostly clay. It was crazy. In the valley, it is not just sand. People tend to think of us as a desert, and we have so many different areas that are so different with the type of soil, with what has happened in that area to create it. So you can have one house that is very sandy soil and another house a mile away that is completely clay, because it just does that for some reason. Now, if you have sandy soil, what that basically happens is the water, I'm talking mostly about water here, the water can go through these big particles, because sand is a larger particle compared to anything else. The water will flow through that quite quickly. And if you're imagining a big box of sand and you pour water in it, the water is going to go straight down the middle of that. It is not going to spread out. If you are watering and you're trying to get the water for your trees and you have sandy soil, you're going to be better served by having multiple emitters around the soil so that you can get all of the roots. Then if you have loamy soil, that's the kind of soil that has just a lot of organic material in it and it's a good mix, and so the water will flow through very evenly going out and down around the same time. And if you have this kind of soil, then you're going to be able to use the flood irrigation type stuff is going to be really good.
And those types of soils in Arizona generally do not come. They're created.
Yeah, the loamy soil, you're right. Unless you're fortunate enough to find an old orchard property, yeah.
That's... Which the orchard was at one point created.
You know, right.
A lot of material and organic matter has been added. I think, Greg, you have a stat, something like what percent of organic matter is in Arizona soil?
Half a percent.
Yeah. And because our soil has been basically dead for so long, we're stuck with either mostly sandy or mostly clay. Now, clay is a tiny particle, and when it gets wet, it's also flat, and when it gets wet, it'll move a little bit and then it can settle on top of itself, and it becomes really hard for the water particles to flow through. And what ends up happening is the water ends up spreading outwards faster than it goes down. And if you have clay soil, You do not want to walk on your wet clay soil because all you're going to do is compact it to the point that the water won't get through without some sort of manipulation of the soil.
And those clays and then the rocks, these are why you see the flash floods.
Yes.
The water doesn't have anywhere to go, and it runs off these materials and downhill very fast.
Yeah, the water goes over it faster than it can go through it. It'll go through sand, but when you're getting, and that's why we have so much clay soil out here, that's why we get our flash floods out in the desert. My recommendation, I've been teaching this since for years with Greg, is that we recommend if you have clay soil, instead of one watering event, you're going to water twice, 24 hours apart, and that water will have a chance to go through the soil deeper. It's more important to get the water deeper into the soil than it is to get it around it. And I guess the big question a lot of people have is, how do I know what kind of soil I have? And there's a jar test that you can do. I have a couple of jars here that I'm showing Romy. This is from the exact same property, and the first jar that he's looking at has this dark, thin brown. How would you describe that?
The bottom of a cattle tank.
Right? There you go.
The water in there is clear because it has settled, but the bottom is all the same muddy color, and there's not a lot of differentiation between the two layers because that came from my yard when I first landed there, and it was all clay. Greg, you got a question.
Yeah, so what she's showing Romy is what we in permaculture we call the jar test. You put a cup or so of soil from your yard, fill the jar the rest of the way up, put a drop of dish soap in there, seal it up, shake it up, and come back 3 days later. So that's what Romy's looking at.
And what does the dish soap do?
It's an emulsifier. It allows the soil to settle faster.
Okay. So this is when we first moved onto the property.
Yeah.
And this is...
I took another test a few years later, and you can see layers in this, right?
The sand, and then it gets looser and looser, and then you've even got particles floating. Now, this is from 2021. I don't see a Sharpie marking on this.
But 8 years ago.
So that has stayed like that for that many years in the jar?
Yeah, that one has.
Wow.
But the soil test is important because if you do this really quick, you can get your own idea of what kind of soil you have.
And you can see there's so much more life in this soil than in just this flat clay.
Yeah. Following the rules of adding organic material to the soil, the transformation in my particular soil is humongous.
Getting your garden watered here in the Urban Farm Hour, segment number 3, coming up. Welcome back to Rosie on the House. If you're just joining us after bottom of the hour news, we are in the Urban Farm Hour. It's what we do here the fourth Saturday of every month in our 8 o'clock Outdoor Living Hour with Farmer Greg of the Urban Farm. And he's got Janice Norton in studio with us today, the general manager of the Urban Farm.
I am. Thank you.
So we've been talking through water sourcing, types of irrigation, types of soils. Let's start getting our infrastructure installed.
Greg?
Get down and dirty. We love something called drip tape. Drip tape is this lay flat, and I think you have a sample of it there, Romy. Lay flat means that when it's not got any water in it, it lays flat. And when it gets water in it, it fills up to, and it looks like a pipe. And the big distinction here between drip irrigation systems and drip tape systems is how the water runs out of the pipes. So with drip irrigation systems, and we're going to talk a little more about why I don't like them in a little while, but with drip irrigation system, the pressure of the water coming out at the beginning of the system is higher, and often the pressure at the end of the system can be non-existent. So you get different pressures throughout the system. With drip tape, and this is something that small and large farms use, but with drip tape irrigation, the entire system pressurizes first, and then the emitters start working. So you get even watering throughout your entire area that you're irrigating, which is really cool.
It's less material because you don't need the elbows and the connectors to put into it to attach your spaghetti line to it to then attach your emitter heads to it. This is a one and done product once laid out.
Mostly.
Once it's laid out, yeah.
Yeah. And it's nice because, like Greg was talking about, is this drip tape will line up. You can do 100-foot lines, and all 100 feet are going to get watered at the same level.
Now, you said it'll pressurize before it starts admitting. How long does it take to pressurize 100 feet? That's still a pretty fast process, I would assume.
A couple seconds?
Yeah.
A couple minutes, maybe, at the most, for the 100 feet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Minute.
And so drip tape, it looks like the poly tubing for your drip irrigation. It's a little smaller circumference, but know what you're looking for when you're going out shopping for this.
A lot of places will sell this in like 100-foot rolls. There are a lot of different kinds that you can get as well. We used to have this kind that was a lot thinner, and we've upgraded to this available in our general store that is thicker because of the intense heat that we've been having and wanting to make sure that it's actually going to be more durable. And granted, it is plastic. Not a lot of organic people love plastic, but it is more efficient and it'll last longer than the other kind that we had.
And are you putting any topsoil or mulch on top of this, or do you like to see this so you can tilt it over and make sure water is coming out of that hole and calcium hasn't clogged it up? Or is it better to trust that it is emitting and put a little layer of ground cover on top?
It depends. It depends. What do you want to do? I always used to leave them on top. I think, Janice, you put mulch over yours, don't you?
I bury it in my orchard. I actually have it in my orchard and my gardens. Hmm. In my gardens, it's up higher, but in my orchard, I bury it because I have so much woody mulch. I want the water to get to the soil. So I pull it out occasionally to check on it.
And the other thing about this kind of a system, Romy, is that the salt doesn't clog it. Because the way it's designed, every time it turns on, it flushes the salt out. It's really cool. It's a really cool thing. And it's generally not available in garden centers and places. You have to get it from us or online, because it's primarily used on farms. It's not. Yeah. This is not a home use product.
Not technically, although we love it.
So you'd have to go to your neighborhood farm co-op or something, or
the
find
urban
the urban farm.
Yeah. Or the urban farm, yeah.
Yeah, we started selling it online.
And we just shipped a huge box to Canada.
We did. That was fun.
Yeah.
So that's drip tape, and y'all, obviously, for all the reasons we've just covered, prefer that. And I do the fact that you don't have to worry about these nozzles getting clogged up with salt, because that is one thing I've really noticed with drip irrigation on the emitter heads, especially in the winter, where you might not be watering every single week. You can go a couple weeks without it. That's a lot longer time for those calcium deposits to build up and clog the emitter heads.
You said something very interesting. You said emitter heads. They're actually, look at that drip tape, Romy. There is no emitter heads on it. They look like little slots on the drip tape.
Yeah, they're an internal piece that is just protected there. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's significantly different. And I want to rant here a little bit on spaghetti systems, spaghetti drip irrigation systems. They take a lot of upkeep. So if you have them in your yard, you need to make sure that you're checking them at least quarterly, I say monthly, to make sure that when your system comes on, they're emitting water. Make sure they don't get clogged with salt. Make sure that the pressure hasn't changed.
And make sure, Janice, that the pressure that might have changed doesn't pop off at one end, because then all the water is going to go out one spot.
Exactly.
So the good thing about that, you usually hear it before you see it.
If you're awake.
You
you have to be out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing about them is that usually what happens in landscapes is somebody that's installing the system will put a single drip emitter right next to the trunk of a tree.
Oh.
And then they set the system to run
every
6 minutes
days.
Every day.
Yeah.
And as that tree grows, if it can grow, as that tree grows, it outgrows that drip emitter. And a 15-gallon size tree will need 3 drip emitters all of a sudden, or 5 drip emitters. And we actually came up with a solution for if you have drip systems. We call it our drip ring. Janice is handing you a copy of it right now, Romy. It is a different kind of drip irrigation product. It has an emitter every 6 inches. And that drip ring, I think, has 20 half-gallon per hour emitters on it. So if you do have drip irrigation on your trees, you can use these drip rings to deliver water throughout the basin rather than just having water at one place right next to the trunk of the tree.
And yet, as you use it, you can expand it out as your tree gets bigger to be able to match your tree ring, which is where the edges of the leaves are, because that's where the water really needs to be. It doesn't need to be on the trunk. It needs to be out where the tree can actually use the water.
Yeah. So my big beef with drip systems is you need to manage them quarterly for sure. Monthly's better. Make sure that they're dripping sufficiently. Make sure that when the tree grows, you add more emitters. And really, and I discovered this 50 years ago, Romy, when I planted my first fruit trees at the Weldon House when I was 15 years old, and that is deep water once a month in the winter, twice a month in the summer on all your, really all your trees and perennials. Anything perennial, they like that deep water.
And that's where soil type from the last segment comes in so critical. If it's sandy and it's going all the way through it, you're deep watering and that water is getting down deep enough where it's not doing any good.
Yes, and if you water on sandy soil like that, if you're not paying attention, you can wash all the nutrients down out of reach of the tree. So you want to make sure that you're watching. You personally take your water and put it out further so that you can get a bigger area, and that way the water will go down where the roots can use it and take the nutrients there too.
And then if it's clay, you've got to make sure the water's running longer so the clay has time to absorb it and start sending the water down instead of out.
Yeah, and sometimes you need to go slower because it takes the longer for it to go through. And when you have drip emitter systems, you talked about the pressure. When you have a drip system, the valves that you can buy at the big box stores or at the irrigation stores, those valves are automatically reducing the pressure from the yard down to something manageable most of the time. If you're going to install drip tape, you have to go even lower. Because you can just pop the ends off of this, you can make sure that it'll come apart itself at all the weak spots. We actually have a 10 PSI pressure reducer that we say mandatory to put on any system of drip tape. Doesn't matter how big the system is.
Yeah.
And even with this, and something I was going to make point-wise, these aren't systems that you're going to need a lot of specialty tools to install.
This is my tool. This is my tool. This gorgeous little hand scissors that has a little punch in the end. The poly tube will fit in there and in this groove, and it makes like a little grip,
it's
like a scissors.
A leather punch.
It is. It is exactly what it is. It is a leather punch that has been altered for poly tube.
And then back to your point, Romy, the rest of the system is like putting together Tinker Toys. They just slide together. And I think all your listeners will get the Tinker Toy part. I don't know if the youngins out there will get that.
It'll give them a conversation for after the broadcast to explain to the youngins what we're talking about.
There you go.
Now, if you're building your ideal system in Arizona, and obviously we established why we like the drip tape so much, but you're not running the drip tape from your irrigation box out to your orchard. You still have to get it transported out there. Are you running PVC and then tapering off to your drip tape, or are you just running drip tape the whole way?
No and no. I didn't say it depends.
I was waiting for that.
With any irrigation system, you have your water source and then you have your water. And I am a huge component that If you're on city water, you want to be taking out the chlorine. When I was at the urban farm, I had a whole house chlorination system, dechlorination system that I put on the house. I actually installed it myself for $250, and it's a product called a Big Blue. It worked great. Get the chlorine out of the water for your entire house. You shouldn't be showering in it. You shouldn't be drinking it. It's great to have it there until it gets to your house.
All right, down to our final segment here, getting water to your garden with Farmer Greg and the Urban Farm Hour, along with Janice Norton from the Urban Farm. Where are we going to wrap this up? Where do we go from here?
So we have a full class on installing drip tape irrigation. If you want to take it, you can go to urbanfarmwater.com. Really what we wanted to do in this last segment is delineate what it takes from the water source to your gardens. So we got our water source. We took the chlorine out of it, city water. The water goes into a timer. And this timer is exactly what it sounds like. You set it to go off at 6 o'clock on Tuesday morning. It goes off and it throws a switch that turns the valve on, the irrigation valve. And that irrigation valve, it allows the water to run to your garden. And then the next step, I'm going to let Janice jump in here, is the drip tape setup.
I'm going to jump back into that step because you suggested something a while back before the chlorine filter, before the valve, is to throw in a shutoff valve. A ball valve on off will give you so much control over your system so you don't have, once you put it in, control your system. So that is an optional thing. Yeah. We love it. And then when you're doing the chlorine filter, if you are putting the filter before your valve, don't do a plastic filter. We do have great plastic filters at the Urban Farm store. That would have to go after the valve. And if you're having it before, you're going to want to do a different one. After the valve, which is the on-off switch that is controlled by your timer, you're going to want to put a pressure reducer. And that's where, for the drip tape, you're going to use a 10 PSI reducer. And be very cautious to make sure you're actually looking at which direction the arrow goes on it. From there, you're going to put in an adapter to go into the poly tubing, because the ones that we have are threaded, and you're going to go to the poly tubing. The poly tube is flexible, and you can run that throughout your yard. You can use some subsystem valves, on-off valves, that you can put to control one garden over another, and you're going to bring the water over to your garden, over to your tree. From the poly tube, you'll use your handy-dandy punch tool, make a hole, put in a single barb, which is this plastic item with a punched hole and a little plug on the end, and that goes into the hole that you've made in your poly tube, and then it has a grabbing end, a twisty grabby end that you are going to slide your drip tape onto, and that will be your single line, however long you need it, for your garden or your orchard or wherever you're putting it.
So this is all pressure fitted. No specialty tools needed.
Besides punching the hole, yeah.
And you had mentioned the shutoff valve. I don't know that you could over shut off a valve, an irrigation system. And even from the right point where it breaks off to your home, there should be one there.
Yes.
Where you get your backflow prevention valve. There's a shutoff valve there, and then it goes to your irrigation box. And even going downstream, because when water leaks hit, you don't always catch it and right away, or you might not be home. Especially in a larger irrigation system. If you get a break way down here and you may not have time to fix it all right now, if you've got a shutoff valve halfway, you can at least get the first part of that continued watering while you're going and working on getting the repair parts downhill, because you can't do any type of repairs on any type of system that's pressurized that, in my opinion, that ever is a clean fix. You can get the water to stop, but the amount of pressure that you're forcing it, it's never quite as clean of punch.
You need it throughout your house. Shut off valve for the bathroom. Shut off valve for the kitchen. That way you can do your repairs right where you need it. You can isolate the issue. But no, you have to shut off the whole house just to make a fix. And that, again, for your garden.
This past winter here in Asheville, we had a spigot on the house break down because it froze.
Yep.
And the only way I could fix it was to turn off the water for the entire house.
Yeah. That's why we recommend the shutoff valves. And the system is, it feels sometimes for some people a little bit intimidating. But once you go through and you set up your very first line, you're going to go, oh, that was easy. It's make a little hole, pop it in, slide it on, twist it tight, done.
And whether you're doing row or raised bed gardening, I really like how easy this is to remove out of it. So when your harvest is done or this planter box is done and we're ripping everything out to go to compost and putting in new soil, new seeds, new starters, whatever, that can be removed. You're not having to work around it. You don't accidentally cut it with your spade or one of your garden tools. When it's done, lay it right back down and you're back at it.
And if you need to redesign and have a less or fewer holes for fewer plugs, they've got these handy-dandy little plugs that'll fill in the hole and make you not drip as much.
They're the goof plugs.
So instead of every 6 inches, you need it 12 inches.
No, this is on the poly tube. The goof plugs go on the poly tube.
So oh, where those don't come in here. Gotcha.
Where you made the holes.
Right.
Yeah. And we have drip tape starter kits online at store.urbanfarm.org. These are little kits we created that are just like starter kits. Get you started, then you can add the stuff that you want. And whether you want a little one or a big one, we've got two different kinds.
Janice Norton, Greg Peterson of The Urban Farm, thanks for spending your Saturday morning with us. You're getting your garden watered, especially through our summer months when they need it the most. Greg, we look forward to talking to you in July. We're talking extreme weather tree care.
Ooh, I may bring Janice back for that one.
It's a good one. I love talking about how we can protect our trees.
Yeah, big time. Thanks for having us.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.